Recording has started.
Great. Well, thank you, Joy. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the NextGen RDS PDP Working Group call on the 30th of May, 2017. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect drum. So if you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no.
This is Rod Rasmussen. Adobe Connect isn't apparently working for me. I'll try again, but I'll be audio only for them until I can get in. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Rod. We'll go ahead and note that. All right. Hearing no further names, as a reminder to everyone to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Also, please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Chuck Gull.
Thank you. Michelle, how do I get the poll message, poll two message? Maybe I can move it. That's my problem. Oh, never mind. It disappeared. Okay. Just wanted to be able to see all the participants better. So welcome, everyone, to our RDS PDP working group today. We've got a very full agenda. Hopefully, make some progress today. Rod, you know what to do. If you're not able to get into Adobe, speak up and let us know when you want to talk. I'll get you in the queue as soon as possible. The agenda is up on the right, and the first thing, as always, is for updates to statement of interest. Does anybody have an update? Please raise your hand or speak up. Okay. Appreciate everybody always keeping their statements of interest updated. The second item on the agenda is to complete their deliberation on the charter question, what steps should be taken to control thin data access? And to do that, we're going to mainly look at the results of last week's poll and talk about the results, the comments, and see if we can possibly come to some tentative conclusions that we can add to our ongoing work. You can see, and you have scrolling capability, that there are 26 participants this past week, and there were a lot of not only people answering the questions, but some very helpful comments, I think. Now, we're going to go through the results in a different order than the way they were presented in the poll, so bear with us on that. As you can see in the agenda, we're going to start with question three. So if you'd scroll down to question three on there, you can see that, and you can see the results. In that particular one, you had four choices. And you actually had three different answer choices for each one of those. And then that's true of the other questions in this poll as well. So you could pick one as your preferred choice. You could pick one. You could also say, I could live with one. In other words, it's not your first choice, but you could live with it. And then you could say you did not support it. If you look at the results, whether you prefer the bar chart or the table, the bottom of page four, you'll see the table. And you can see that there was pretty good support for option A. And one of the things that Lisa did in these results is she added in blue font there kind of a net result where you take the number of this is my preference plus I could live with it, and you subtract those who do not support it. So we got a net result of 18 on choice A, whereas B was definitely not one that had much support, and then C and D were lower. So the option A is what I'd like us to talk about. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't talk about the others still, but there seems to be pretty good support for that, or at least minimal opposition. And the question I had on that option A is, do we need the word minimum? The more I thought about it after reviewing the results and the comments and so forth, I wondered whether we really need the word minimum there. Now, I don't know, that's not terribly significant, I don't think. But we can talk about that as we go forward. What I'd like to ask now, and I didn't identify who those who did not support that option, but if you're on the call and you didn't support that option, I'd love to hear why you don't support that option and if there's some modification of that option that could be made that might remove your opposition. Please raise your hand if you're one of those who opposed it. Okay. So then let's go to, and for those that just joined, and there are probably several, we're looking at question number 3 in the poll. So if you'll scroll down to page 4, you'll see the results there. And in particular, we're focusing on option A, which had pretty good support, a net support of 18, which is certainly way above any of the others, and only 3 people opposed it. So, again, I'll ask the question one more time. If there's anybody, or I'll request, if there's anybody on the call who did not support, check the Do Not Support column for A. I'd love to hear you share why you do not support it, so maybe we could modify it to gain your support. So please raise your hand if you're one of those who didn't support, who do not support A, and share with us your rationale. In the meantime, I raised the question whether the word minimum is needed. Any thoughts on that? I mean, does minimum really serve a purpose there? Would it be sufficient to say a set of thin data elements must be accessible by unauthenticated RDS users? I don't really have a problem with minimum, but I'm not sure it has any value. McKaylee.
McKaylee, for record, I tend to agree with you, Chuck. I don't think minimum adds any real value, and if we leave minimum in, then you're going to trigger the natural what the hell is minimum argument, whereas if you just simply say a set of thin data elements, then you leave it up to the reader to decide.
Okay, thanks McKaylee. Chuck again, Greg Shatton, go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Shatton for the record. I haven't studied statistics since college, which was longer ago than I care to admit. I believe the term minimum set has some meaning in statistical analysis, or at least setting up statistics-based types of studies. That said, we're not doing that, and it may have wandered in here. Whoever drafted this may have had, you know, some previous experience in using the word minimum set in its proper connotation. But since I don't know what minimum set means, and I actually did take 2 statistics courses in college, I doubt that those who are even worse off than me have any better sense of what it means. So I should get rid of it. And if it was intended to mean either what it means in that context or something else, we should figure out what it means rather than leaving it open to ambiguity, misinterpretation, and mischief. Attorneys at law.
So, Greg, this is Chuck. Did I understand you to ultimately say that you would be okay if we removed it? Remove the word minimum?
Remove the word minimum?
Yes, yes, you should remove the word minimum. Sorry, I'm on the tablet, so we have to unmute. But, yes, we should remove it because unless we can decide what it means and come up with a definition and probably replace it with a word that can be understood by the average person and not be some sort of SATS jargon, we should just get rid of it and be simple and straightforward in our language. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Chuck again. Stephanie, your turn.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, and let the record show that I'm agreeing with Greg. I always like to celebrate that when it happens. I dropped out of SATS in first year, so my problem with this, when we talk about a minimum set, a set, any kind of a set, until we define that, we really can't say that they must be available, because people like me will continue to put their footnote, which I did. I'm the one that put something about we need to define the elements there. I also wonder what Agreement 20 is. This is almost like a meaningless agreement until we define what those elements are. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Michael.
Thank you. Michael Hammer for the record. When I read the word minimum, my understanding was that there's a certain number of data elements that you need to have in order for thin data to be useful, not statistics, not anything like that. And we've heard people say, for example, that expiration date should not be included, things like that. So my understanding was, absent a definition of what those data elements might be, that the principle is some minimum number, some set of data, should be available in thin data to unauthenticated users.
Go ahead.
No, that's all I got.
Oh, okay. All right, good. We wanted to make sure. So this is Chuck again. So would you be opposed to us removing the word minimum?
I would prefer that it stay in simply because there has been disagreement expressed as to what should be included in thin data.
So what does minimum mean?
That's something that we need to define.
Okay, and I would prefer we not go down that route, spending time defining it, as you might, and you probably don't need to understand why, from my point of view. But okay, thanks, Michael. That's okay. That's good. Mark.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Mark. I guess my thinking is more in line with Michael's in that I read this as meaning a minimum set of elements that must be included, but sort of that phrasing doesn't preclude including additional elements. And I'll point out that there are some registry operators that have additional RDS elements that they provide in their output. There are some TLDs that have some unique attributes and display those in their RDS output. I read this phrasing, a minimum set of thin data elements, as sort of taking that into account and allows flexibility for registry operators with unique or non-standard requirements, the ability to display those. I don't think it hurts anything keeping it in, and I think it adds a level of flexibility to leave it. So, I don't feel particularly strongly about this. My suggestion would be to leave it as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. This is Chuck. So how would the sentence differ with or without the word minimum? So is there really much difference between a set of thin data, elements must be accessible by unauthenticated RDS users versus a minimum set, et cetera? That's to you, Mark.
That's to me. Well, I guess that really depends on if we're defining, you know, we're defining exactly what a thin a set of thin data elements are. If we're leaving that up to the implementer, then it doesn't matter. But if we're explicitly defining it, then it makes a huge difference.
I guess I don't see that, but we are going to define what the thin data elements are. I think we've said that every week for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I know in your case, you've been on vacation. So we are going to do that. Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Lisa Pfeiffer. I noted this in chat, but this principle was based on an EWG principle. And the EWG referred to a minimum set of data elements here, but it also then defined that the minimum public data set will be getting to that when we return to deliberate on the data elements charter question. So this was really intended originally, and the principle we based this on, to refer to that minimum public data set, where to lay the groundwork for defining a minimum public data set. I hope that helps.
Okay. Greg, is that a new hand?
Yes. I'm just saying, looking at what's in the chat, I think that, and I've said it myself in the chat, that defined rather than minimum would be clearer and better. Since I don't think we necessarily need to say to be defined, because I think that, you know, once we, until we defined it, it's understood. But I would avoid that. I mean, minimum data sets otherwise I see are used, for instance, in sets of data that are used for analysis by, say, the World Health Organization, the American Psychological Association. You know, in each case, it becomes a defined data package that's then used in statistical analysis. And again, since we're not doing statistical analysis, we're at best borrowing a term and thus misusing it. And I think if we say defined set, we say what we need to say, and I've said what I need to say.
Thanks, Greg. Is that a new hand, Lisa?
Sorry, old hand.
Okay. A defined set of thin data elements must be accessible. I kind of like that. Anybody dislike that? Rod? Glad to see you're in Adobe.
Yeah, and I had some sort of weird link. Rod Rasmussen here. So, yeah, so we run into the problem if we say a defined set of prescribing that it's that set and only that set. And we're getting, I actually have a math degree, so there's a, yeah, set theory gets kind of, I don't want to bore people with the details, but I don't know if Andrew's on the call. He could probably tell, talk much better about it than I can. So you run into the issue of if you say a defined set, then if you have other elements that would be thin based on the registry, you kind of preclude that potentially. So you want to be careful there. Thanks.
Thank you, Rod. This is Chuck. And considering that we are going to define which of the thin data elements would be accessible, and so when we say, when I say a defined set of thin data, I don't know if this is what Greg meant. In other words, we would define which thin data elements would be accessible without authentication, authenticated RDS access. So, Rod, go ahead.
Yeah, Rod again. So, at least a defined set or something along those lines, then, because that's where the minimum comes in, right? I think it was explained earlier that you have potentially more data elements available in thin based on the registry itself, because there's, again, different registries have other elements that may fall into the thin category that won't be in everybody's thin set. So if you're going to say a defined set, you need to say at least a defined set or something along those lines. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And I think we've discussed this enough. Notice Lisa's suggestion in the chat. At least a defined set of thin data elements must be accessible by authenticated RDS users. Just for the sake of time and talking, okay, I wanted to see what Michael had to say in the chat. Good. Okay, so going with Lisa's wording, and keep in mind we can refine it if we find a better way to do it later, if we go with at least a defined set of thin data elements must be accessible by unauthenticated RDS users, is there anyone on the call that would oppose that wording and oppose that statement? Put a red X in the Adobe, or again, if anybody's joined that is not an Adobe, speak up. So I'm not seeing anybody that would oppose that. So thank you, and thanks for the good discussion. So let's add that as an action item. So we will put that statement into our poll for this week to allow all of you to confirm it, that you support it or not. And we will, of course, give those who are not on the call a chance to express their opinion as well. Any more discussion on question three? Okay. Let's go then to questions five and four. I don't know. Lisa, was your ordering there? Did you think it was better to cover five before four? I didn't ask that question before, so go ahead.
Yes, I did check. Okay. This is Lisa Pfeiffer. Question five is actually all about purpose, and question four has some aspects of purpose in the comments, so it seemed to make sense to deal with five.
Okay,
first.
Good. I should have asked that before the call, but I didn't. So I just picked that up now. So let's scroll down to question five, which I think is on page nine. And this actually starts on page eight, okay, the bottom of page eight. There we go. On this one, you can see the results are spread out quite a lot. And let's see if we can narrow it down at all. There was certainly not a one choice that stood out. Choices B and C had the higher net number, so A certainly doesn't look like a viable option. On question five, I want to call attention to some of the comments that were made. So if you want to scroll down to the comments, I thought there are quite a few, and if I don't pick on yours, that doesn't mean your comment wasn't good, but there are certain ones that kind of I thought were particularly helpful. Comment number three, thin data is assumed public. We haven't quite come to the conclusion that all thin data is going to be public yet, but that aside, it makes little sense to declare the purpose to access publicly available info. I mean, I think that's an accurate statement. Comment five, and several of the comments were related to this comment. Without some sort of mechanism to state purpose, a mechanism that hasn't been invented, this is not something we should specify. So quite a few people who commented had concerns, as I did myself, so I can relate to the concern. The idea of a purpose the implication that a purpose has to be stated would be an operational complication that several of you noted. And comment six is very similar, right? Stated purposes open a Pandora's box to criteria and decision rules and so forth. And then if you look at comments, the last three comments, 8, 9, and 10, they all deal with that same thing. The way some of the options are worded on this one, the whole idea of possibly having to state a purpose if you want access, of course that would go against our principle that we've worked on the last couple of weeks and at least tentatively finalized. So I wanted to call attention to those. And that said, let me be quiet and see if others have comments on question five. Michael, go ahead.
Michael Hammer, for the record, because I'm shy. the phrasing of the question leads some ambiguity. So is it that the data elements that we choose to put in should have a stated purpose, or is it that the individual accessing the data must state a purpose? So if it's the latter, I would oppose it. If it's the former, that may not be a bad thing, and it may help with meeting GDPR or other regimes.
That's stated very well, Michael. This is Chuck speaking again. And I think that's where a lot of people had concerns. Is there anybody on the call that thinks that the individual requesting access to thin data would need to state a purpose? I think we all agree that we're going to have to state a purpose. I mean, as Paul, and that was kind of the intent, I think, of option B, that RDS policy must cite purposes for giving access. But let's listen to McKaylee.
Thanks, Jess McKay, for the record. I suppose you'd have to have a purpose for every data element that's made available, but that doesn't mean that the requester would have to provide it. So in the case of thin data elements, which, unless I missed something, I think we all agreed nobody cared about particularly. I mean, they didn't want them to, they didn't particularly need them to be private or hidden or obfuscated or whatever. We could say that those data elements are, you know, collected and published for, and then provide a list of purposes. That's fine. It's once you get into the more potentially sensitive data that you open up a bigger can of worms. But I mean, the thin data elements, they don't open up that can of worms.
Thank you, Michele. Chuck again. So let me looking at option B. Especially the last part, RDS policy must state purposes for public access to thin data, and including the prefatory statement as well. There were six people that said they do not support that. If any of you are on the call, I think it'd be helpful for the whole group to hear your thinking on that, and in fact, that might help us refine the statement to something that's more acceptable. Anybody on the call that selected I do not support item B? Okay. All right. Is there anybody on the call that's opposed to item B the way it's worded right now? Okay. That said, now, again, I'm not doing a very good job at keeping up with the chat, so somebody jump in if there's something in there that's significant that needs to be said. All right. So, Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. I just wanted to call your attention to I copied a couple of our previous working group agreements in chat that relate to having already agreed that thin data elements should have at least one legitimate purpose and that every existing thin data element does have at least one legitimate purpose. Now, that's not purpose for access, purpose for collection, but we did previously agree on that point.
Thank you. So should we just put item B in a poll this week? As worded, would anybody suggest any changes to the wording as it is now and re-poll on that one just by itself as a tentative conclusion? Now, we're going to go to four, and we may come back to five, question five, after we discuss four. But for now, let's make that a poll question pending what we discuss and decide on question four. Good question, Lisa. I think because we were really exploring, trying to get thinking going, I think we need to be more explicit that this is a conclusion that nobody objected to on the call. And that's a little different than what we saw. You know, hopefully it'll be, you know, an easy one. But I think we ought to explicitly state that this conclusion, choice B there, there were no objections on the call, and we're confirming that there are no objections in the whole working group. And, again, people on the call can do that. Steve Metallitz, go ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Steve. I just had a question about, you're talking about B toward the bottom here of page 8, right, that to deter
yes.
misuse and promote accountability. All right, well, I understand that the policy can state purposes for public access to the thin data, but it's not clear to me exactly how that deters misuse and promotes accountability if we're basically saying, in not so many words, or maybe in so many words, that it's publicly accessible. Does this mean that access for purposes other than those stated in the policy would be punished in some way or would be prohibited in some way? I'm just not clear how the statement of a purpose in the policy works to deter misuse and promote accountability. So that.
Thanks, Steve. This is Chuck. And what you're getting at is kind of why when I stated choice B, I left the prefatory part off.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry. I may have missed
No, I what you're saying is why I did it, but I didn't make that clear. So, no, that
thank you.
You're fine. What you said is needed to be said, I think, or it's helpful. So I guess my question then, do you think we ought to leave off that prefatory part and just say RDS policy must state purposes for public access to thin data? And Steve, if you want to respond, you can.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that would eliminate the question that I had, but I did wonder if other people may have seen a connection there that I didn't see.
Thanks. Okay, McKaylee, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, McKaylee, for the record. I'm not 100% sure what Steve is querying. I mean, in terms of data protection, you need to have a purpose for every data element that you collect. And then you need to have purposes for disclosure. So if you're making something publicly available without restricting who has access to it, then you need to have a purpose assigned to the elements. Are we agreeing or disagreeing on that? I'm not clear, but I mean that's.
So McKaylee, do you think that prefatory clause there to deter misuse and promote accountability is needed in option B?
That actual phrase, no, because it's inferred.
Okay. I think that's what Steve is saying. Steve, you're welcome to jump in if I misstated in any way. Okay.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
Go ahead. You're on mute, Stephanie. There we go.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. As usual, I made some nitpicking comments on the poll. McKaylee, dead right. You have to have a purpose for collection, use, and disclosure. It's not necessarily pulled RP in language or under processing, but you still need one. So ICANN, in order to disclose data elements that originate, and I draw your attention to Cannatucci's remarks in Copenhagen on this score, even though this is not nominative data, it's still information, let's assume a person that is registering a domain. The data relates to that person's domain and is considered, you know, the purpose of the file is to create a registration for that individual to register that domain. Therefore, even if it's not nominative, the data could be construed to be personal, and therefore you need a purpose for disclosure. Now, the problem with the word accountability here is how on earth does ICANN, on stating its purpose for accountability, assume accountability for who's going to vacuum up the data, possibly link it with other personal data that they can find on the web or that they already have or whatever, and create a master file that is intrusive to that individual? How much accountability does ICANN and its WHOIS utterances have for that? Now, I would point out that the answer that Buzzarelli has given to this very difficult question about private sector cybercrime enforcement, which we all know we certainly want to have, is that those companies are going to be subject to the GDPR, and that therefore they will be accountable for how they collected the data, what their purpose in collecting, using, and disclosing it is, et cetera. Nevertheless, there's a chain of accountability that goes from ICANN to these guys, and I think I have a problem with the use of the accountability word here if we're allowing free, unauthenticated, untracked access because you have no accountability mechanism there. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. This is Chuck. So if I'm jumping to an unfair conclusion, please let me know, but it sounds like you wouldn't oppose removing to deter misuse and promote accountability and just have the statement, RDS policy must state purposes for public access to send data. Is that correct?
Yes, because I think that when you throw the other stuff in, you get back to, okay, then why did you make it freely available without authentication?
Okay. Thank you.
Because we're doing nothing to determine.
So, is there anybody on the call who's opposed to the statement RDS policy must state purposes for public access to send data as a tentative conclusion, just like all these conclusions we're reaching, but for now, is there anybody that's opposed to that? Okay. So, and you can put a red X, and I didn't say that, but I think everybody knows it by now. All right, so we'll poll on that one as a tentative conclusion that there were no objections to for those on the call today. Let's go now. Let's now go back to question 4, which starts on the bottom of page 6. If you want to scroll there on the screen, let me move it up just a little bit. Okay, so on question 4 then, the I want to call you. Notice the results. They're not definitive, certainly, but keeping in mind that the main purpose of most of our poll questions this past week was to get us thinking about these things and facilitate our discussion today. So far, that has seemed to have been successful. But you just had two choices in question four. Certainly choice A was fairly strong, but there were quite a few that preferred none on this one. What I want to call your attention to, if you scroll down just a little bit into page 5, and look at comment 5, okay, which says it might be helpful to say something like, within the set of approved purposes, so, and that's to avoid a need to match a requester's exact purpose with one of the approved purposes. I thought that was a pretty helpful and constructive comment that I made there. So you might be surprised that I like that one. Sorry for the lighthearted thing there, but within the set of approved purposes, instead of within the same purpose, is a suggestion that I would make. And then if you there are a couple of comments 6, 7, and 8 are all, I thought, helpful as well. Again, going back to the concept we talked about in question 5, that users will not need to state their purposes for thin data. Now, I probably should throw in a qualification here. In the EWG report, when we get into big data and the more complicated issues that McKaylee referred to earlier, there is this recommendation by the EWG that people do have to identify their purposes. But we're talking about thin data right now, and maybe some subset of thin data. So what do people think about changing the end of choice A, where it says within the same purpose, to within the set of approved purposes? Does that make sense? Would that help on that? Let me open it up for discussion. Any discussion on question 4? That, by the way, as a math major myself, I would not call that mathematics. I'd call it arithmetic. But arithmetic's probably a subset of math, so I'm being too picky there. Michael, go ahead.
Michael Hammer, for the record. I'm not even sure what we mean when we say a level playing field for all requesters.
So look at comment 2, Michael. That Jim Galvin submitted that one. Another, I think, helpful comment there. Would you be more comfortable with Jim's suggestion?
So if a request is high ping, does that mean we need to degrade responses to low ping requesters?
Okay, restate that for me, please.
Okay, so if someone has poor access to the internet, does that mean we slow everybody else down to their level? What is that level playing field? We talk about the process creating that level playing field.
So I get your point with regard to level playing field.
is it that the data elements returned must be the same for everybody? That makes sense. Or is there something else?
Good questions. How do you? I mean, back to the question I asked you. Do you like the suggestion and comment too, instead of level playing field, or would you modify that?
Non-discriminatory. I understand that, but there's been discussion about, you know, if you're making more than X queries, that's a different matter, things like that. So what is it that we think must be offered in terms of thin data to all requesters in a non-discriminatory matter? Is it qualitative only? Is it quantitative?
Let's let McKaylee take a stab at that.
Thanks, Chuck. McKaylee's record. Lisa put some of this in the chat. I think this comes back to the concept of equal access. You know, the level playing field that everybody has. There's no preferential treatment. I think that's what it came back to, and I wouldn't read too much into it. Does that answer your question?
I suspect not, but I'll let Michael answer that.
So Michael Hammer again. So if we're not supposed to read too much into it, then why have it?
Don't ask me that. Michael, this is McKaylee. From my perspective, I think there's a lot of things that we've ended up kind of wordsmithing and spending a ridiculous amount of time looking at, which I personally think is a wonderful way to give yourself a massive headache without actually getting much in return. But that's just me personally.
Michael Hammer again. I somewhat agree, but I mean, let's be honest. This is going to involve and relate to laws and lawyers. I grew up, and you can't see my gray hairs, but I have gray hairs. I kind of grew up with the early internet, and so my predisposition is to have it as open and available as possible. I remember the days of acceptable use policy and the anointed and the non-anointed. But I think if we're going to have language, we need to be careful about the language we have. Because it may be abused later in ways that were unintended, or B, it will lead to conflicts down the road. And I know we've been kicking an awful lot of cans down the road.
So, Michael, I'm going to put you on the spot, and then I'll give you some time to think about it when I call on Stephanie. See if you can come up with a wording. I think we're probably all in agreement. We obviously don't have control over the access that different people have to the internet, so it's not going to, their access certainly is not going to be equivalent. But from a policy perspective, our policies should not favor one requester versus another, and I think that's what we're talking about when we say non-discriminatory, and what McKaylee's saying, not to read too much into it. But see if you can come up with some wording. Jim Galvin suggested one approach. I don't know if that totally covers it either, but it's an idea. And see if you can come up with a way to reword choice A that might address what you're getting at. In the meantime, let's listen to Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie. My question is, if we use this non-discriminatory, what I'm worried about is, supposing that you suspect that someone who's a heavy hitter on data is actually compiling it, adding in personal data, as I have suggested, and that they therefore are misusing the system to compile a personal information dossier, if you want to discriminate against those people, you can't if you decide that, if we include this language. Are we going to get hung up on this later without providing ourselves any benefit? I mean, the principle that everybody should have equal access is fine, but the actual reality of having an enforceable restriction, I see fading off into the sunset once we've agreed on anonymous, unauthenticated, free, non-discriminatory access. And I hope you get my point here. Thanks.
So, Stephanie, do you have any suggestions on how this might be reworded? And if you want to think about it, I can come back to you.
I'll think about it, but you'll probably kill me because it'll mean going back on unauthenticated and all the rest of it, because clearly you have some means of identifying that this is the same party. Now, who is that? Is that my IP address? Is that, you know, I am not a geek, so I don't know. A registrar might detect that somebody was mining their system and doing it, you know? Thanks. Anyway, I'll think about it. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Let's go to Michele, and then I'll come back to Michael. Go ahead, Michele.
Thanks, Michele, for records and what have you. I'm not sure whether I qualify as a geek in Stephanie's world or not, but I don't see the two as being mutually exclusive. There's no reason why you cannot put restrictions to prevent abuse, to maintain the level, the quality of service, all of that kind of thing, and still give everybody equal access. I mean, the assumption is, in my mind, if I'm giving access to a resource, I'm not giving access to somebody who's being abusive. I'm assuming that their access is legal, permissible, non-abusive. They're not trying to DDoS the service or whatever. So I don't have an issue with, I mean, Volker's given some nice wording, non-discriminatory access for all permissible uses. But I mean, I thought we'd already covered ad nauseum, may I add, that there was nothing, that you know, maintaining the stability of the system and putting in place measures to ensure that and mitigating against abuse was all completely normal and acceptable and not an issue. So while I understand Stephanie's fear, I think we've already covered it, so I don't think we need to again.
Thank you, Michele. And let me go back to Michael, see if he has any possible edits.
I do not. Michael Hammer, for the record, I do not. I'm not an English major. And the fact is, when I listen to discussion of abuse and permissible uses, quite honestly, I look at DDoS is something totally different than somebody aggregating data. And so are we trying to boil the ocean in answering this question? Is it about technical issues? And I know that we're still talking about thin data, but, you know, people aggregate data and create other value. Okay, so Michelle McKaylee doesn't see aggregation as an issue, but I think others do. And so I'm still trying to wrap my head around what is the intent when we talk about this level playing field. Is it in the actual technical accessing of the data over the wire? There's not clarity to me.
So I think we can answer that question. I think the answer, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we're talking about the technical access. We know that there's great variability in that depending on where you live and what kind of access you have. We're talking about from a policy perspective, there should be non-discriminatory access. And I want everybody to focus on Volcker's suggestion. Does it work? And then I'm going to throw out another question. Do we even need a statement like A? Are we trying to say something that doesn't need to be said? And I'm not I'm not saying that I think that. I'm asking whether we need this statement. And then I'm also asking, and there's some support for Volcker's formulation, although I'm not sure it deals, Michael, with the concern you're talking about. Comments, okay? What do you think about Volcker's statement? Or does someone think maybe we don't even need what I'll refer to as a non-discriminatory statement? How many people, and I want you to put a green check mark in Adobe, how many people think that we need a statement along the lines, assuming we can come up with acceptable wording, of choice A there, in other words, non-discriminatory access for permissible uses? Put a green check mark if you think we need to have a statement along those lines. And if you don't think we need it, put a red X. Okay, so I certainly got one so far. Scrolling down, three. So there, and then Stephanie doesn't even think it's needed. Okay, that's good. Okay. Couple people, Steve Metallis also doesn't think it's needed. There are half a dozen or so that think it's needed. A lot of people aren't sure. So not a lot of people are apparently not sure one way or the other, which is okay. And Michael, the question is how do we word a broad principle to avoid getting caught in the weeds later? Which is, I think, your original point. And let's see, a couple people are typing, so I'm going to just pause a little bit here and see what suggestions. You can go ahead and remove your green check marks and red X's. And let's see. Thanks for clarifying in the chat what I tried to say. So. And one of the things that seems to be coming out is that, that we don't have any control over the technical access that people have from a ISP point of view or local access and so forth. So do we need to maybe, if we take Michael's or Volker's statement there, RDS access to thin data must be non-discriminatory from a policy perspective. Would it help to add from a policy perspective? Or maybe we should say RDS policies should be non-discriminatory for thin data. Because that kind of avoids the technical issues that we have no control over. Okay. Well, I don't want to spend too much more time on this. If anybody has a suggestion of how we might move this forward, what should we test the statement that I and I'm not? I'm just trying to help us make some progress here. What about the statement that I just made? RDS policy must be non-discriminatory for thin data. RDS access policy, I guess it should say. RDS access policy for thin data must be non-discriminatory. Let's leave the parenthetical out for now. If people want it back in, we can put it back in. The reason I'm saying that is because, again, level playing field from a policy perspective, I think, is a need. We can't create a perfectly level playing field for everybody in the world, obviously, if we include all factors. Greg and Stephanie, if you are okay, so you can leave your X or your green check in, but notice that Lisa has started another Adobe poll here. Green check if you support this statement: RDS policies for access to thin data must be non-discriminatory. Green check mark if you could support that or at least live with it. A red X if you not. So, Stephanie, you do not think that RDS policies for access to thin data must be non-discriminatory. Is that correct?
I would like to include Volker's language, the for all permissible purposes. Access for all permissible purposes.
So you would just modify it a little bit further. RDS policies for access to thin data must be non-discriminatory. Hold on, I'm scrolling up to make sure I get Volker's language. It's way up there now. So you would add for all permissible purposes, which I think that's a good edit. So we're back to so we would just add at the end for permissible purposes. So RDS policies for access to thin data must be non-discriminatory for permissible purposes. And you'd be okay with that, Stephanie?
Sorry for the delay there, Stephanie again. Lisa has suggested legitimate to replace permissible. And if that's what we've been using, then I guess legitimate is the one we should go with.
So anybody opposed to that? And then if any of you want to change your green check marks, you can. But is there anybody that's opposed to that wording? So RDS policy, we better put it in there in writing so people can see it, Lisa, if you can do that. RDS policies for access to thin data must be non-discriminatory for legitimate purposes. Michael, you opposed to that?
Michael Hammer, for the record. Yes, for exactly the reason that Nathalie wrote. When somebody connects, it's difficult to impossible to know what their purpose is. We've already said that they don't have to authenticate, they don't have to jump through any hoops, so this basically leaves it to the eye of the beholder rather than a good standardized way of dealing with it.
Well, that's true of any access to thin data. It's not going to be enforced.
Then why have it? This is a King Canute kind of situation.
Well, because there are laws in some jurisdictions that require there to be legitimate purposes. That's why we have it.
I'll post in the chat a link to who King Canute is for Volcker.
Okay. Greg Shatton, why would you oppose this latest statement?
Pretty much for the same reasons that Michael just stated. And I state that it's when we're dealing with thin data, I disagree with your statement about what the law says.
You don't think there are some jurisdictions that require a purpose? That require a purpose?
In data? Not as we've assuming we define it pretty much as we've been defining it. I don't, but in any case, if there are, then I think we need to have clear legal opinions on that. And once we get to personal data, it's a different ball game. But I think trying to boot the personal data back in, no matter what Professor Cotinaccio or whatever his name was said in COVID, I love maximalist government employees. Obviously, they want everyone to over comply. But as far as I understand it, and obviously I don't know the privacy and data laws of 192 countries or however many there are that have them, but as far as we're dealing with thin data, my understanding is there isn't. So I think we need to, avoid, assumptions or, going with the laws of the most repressive regime. Unless we're planning to do that with other things such as free speech and other things, perhaps ownership of private property. I'm not sure where that takes us, but nowhere good. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. We're not going to jump ahead yet, but if you look at agenda item 4, we're going to give a little on the legal review that was suggested quite a few weeks ago now. We'll give you an update on where we're at on that later in the agenda. So I think we spent enough time on this one. We're not going to reach a conclusion, I don't think, on this in this call. So we'll table that one for now. And I know table means different things in different cultures. So in other words, we'll put it on hold for now. And the leadership team will maybe try to come up with a way forward on this. So you may remove your marks in the Adobe. And let's go to question 6. And I'm glad that Nathalie is on the call. I'm going to put you on the spot, Nathalie, coming up here. So just a little bit of a warning. So if you want to scroll down to question 6, she was the only one that suggested another possible Oops, I'm trying to find question six myself here. There we go. Okay. Another guiding principle of proportionality. So what I'd like to do, and this is on the last page, page 10, okay? What I'd like to do is ask Natalie, if she would please, to talk about her proposal of proportionality as a guiding principle. Are you on mute, Natalie? Oh, you're typing. Let's see what we get here. Okay. If you can type, that would be great. In the meantime, if anybody wants to jump in and talk about proportionality as a possible principle, you're welcome to do so, including Patrick, who apparently, unless that's an old green check, or Stephanie or Tom, I don't know if those are green checks in support of Natalie's suggestion. If they are and any of you would like to talk, please raise your hand. A lot of people are typing, so I'm going to just pause. Bear with us while we see what people are typing. Can anyone answer Steve's question, Steve Metallic's question? How does proportionality apply to thin data? I think so that we have time to do a couple other agenda items before we close today, then I'm going to take Lisa's suggestion and take this to the list. So an action item will be for the staff to raise the issue of adding proportionality to a possible principle, a guiding principle, and in particular dealing with Steve's question also. Does it apply? Does proportionality apply to thin data? If so, how or not? Let's generate a few questions, sub-questions, too, and hopefully everybody can participate on the list. We're not far enough along, I don't think, to do a poll question on this one. Okay. All right. Going on then to our next agenda item, do we have any progress? Let's see, do we have, we don't have Andrew, or it was Rod, it was you, any progress working with VA on the data of record tasks that you guys volunteered to work on?
Rob Rasmussen here. Yeah, this is the discussion around reasonable limitations on for access based on the fact that you want to protect systems, but you don't want to allow registries and registrars to use that provision to, I guess, the thing we were just talking about, block access or provide discriminatory access, I guess. So I've not made much progress direct because we haven't been able to connect up, but we did make some progress around looking at the current RAID policy is implemented around this, because this has come up as an issue before, and there's been work done on it within the ICANN community, and collating that information together, and have some requests in for further information. We're looking at this, a similar issue in SAC as well, so we've actually been working on some of these things tangentially to what we're working on here. But the main thing is to find out what, you know, kind of what the current status quo is from a inferred policy, because ICANN has in its operations basically created a de facto policy around what reasonable access is currently to data based on compliance regime. So they're currently testing, for example, based on the RIA and the registry agreement, the current versions actually have specifications around being, you have to provide access. It is every 5 minutes, 10 different servers around the world will query for information, who is information. And if you fail that X so many times, you're not in compliance with supplying adequate levels of access, and that's kind of the bare minimum. So that translates into 10 simultaneous connections or one connection every 30 seconds is what's in policy. Then there's implications in some of the things that compliance is written around how often that they're actually testing and looking at these a little bit more stringently than that. And that's information I've got some requests in to find out more about how that works. So using that as a kind of a baseline for how we're doing things today, we're also going to take a look at what other people have done in other policy areas to make sure that the policy matches what makes sense for the kind of data access we're talking about. So that's where we are on that one.
And so you're waiting for some responses on that. Did I understand that, Rod?
Waiting for some responses around what ICANN is currently implemented in the compliance and area around this, because that's de facto policy, right? But there's also doing some research as to what other regulatory agencies or other areas that are similar to this in providing data access have done as far as how they've written this up and as far as policy goes. So doing some research there and to see where we can find some other examples, because this is not an area where I think we want to invent the wheel or reinvent it for the 100,000th time. It's more of how can we make sure we're providing good guidance on this that avoids problems that have been documented in the past around access to this kind of information within the ICANN space. So, and if we can ever hook up, that's what we'll do some more. I'm looking at it from a US/English speaking perspective on the work I've been looking at, and I hope to get some other folks who've worked with other regimes to take a look at some other ways of approaching the same problem.
So thanks, Rod. This is Chuck. If you could, and as you pull this together, it would be helpful if you can put something in writing. It doesn't have to be real formal or anything, as some recommendations based on what's been done in other areas. And I think your thinking's right. Let's try not to reinvent the wheel. We'll continue to allow you some time, and hopefully you and VA can connect eventually as well. All right. Thanks for spending the time on this. It's not a trivial task, so it's much appreciated what you're doing. Hopefully we'll all benefit as a working group. Let's go to agenda item four. After our meetings in Copenhagen and afterwards, when we got responses back from the data protection experts, we have and we'll get to that poll, so bear with us. So do I need to do the poll for So we'll get to that poll. You can leave that up there for now. Don't focus on it. Marika in particular has been reaching out to some possible experts that we would hope would be independent, and this kind of goes back to Greg Shatton's comments too. Some people requested independent review of the data protection regulations that are pending in Europe and in other, and some that are in place in other jurisdictions around the world. So Marika in particular has been working on this. And Marika, maybe you can just give a 2-minute synopsis of what you've been doing so that people can see a little bit of the picture.
This is Marika. Sorry, getting off mute. Yes, so basically following our earlier conversations on this topic, I've reached out to a couple of law firms and contacts that either I had or through other colleagues that we knew had experience in this area, and basically shared with them the questionnaire that was developed originally for the session with the DPAs in Copenhagen, and basically requested for some input on, you know, whether it would be something that the personal law firm would be able to assist with, if so, what the expected cost would be, as well as the expected time frame for delivering responses, as well as providing some information on their qualifications and experience in this area, so that the leadership team would have the ability to review that information and hopefully make a determination on which of the people we reached out to might be best suitable to provide the working group with the legal advice it was looking for on those questions. So that's where we're currently at. We've received input from two people to date. We're still waiting on a couple of others, and that information has been shared with the leadership team.
Thank you very much, Marika. This is Chuck. And one of the things that Marika also did is she confirmed that there are some funds available in the fiscal year 17 budget, which ends the end of June, okay? And the advantage of using some of those funds would be leave more available in the fiscal year 18 budget to the extent that funds are available to do follow-up work in fiscal year 18. So in my opinion, it'd be really good if we can fund this out of fiscal year 17 dollars, thereby leaving a little bit more, hopefully, for fiscal year 18 as we need it. Now, to do that, though, in fiscal year 17 puts us in a real time crunch, okay? Ideally, we'd involve the whole working group and get this all put together. If we do that, we can forget fiscal year 17 funds. So what the leadership team proposes is to go ahead and try and make this happen in fiscal year 17. Obviously, it would have to be with minimal working group input. We would try to do everything in our power, depending on the available legal experts in the short time frame, to make sure the advice would be independent. We would give them the same questions we gave the data protection commissioners, and so forth. And the leadership team would coordinate with with whoever would be contracted with on this issue, trying to best represent all of you, recognizing that obviously there are very different perspectives on all of these issues. And that's one of the reasons why we have a leadership team that's made up of vice chairs and myself, who are all from different stakeholder groups in the GNSO. And then we also have interest, you know, people like on the, in particular, managing abuse and so forth. So what we would try to do as a leadership team would be to do as best we can to represent the working group on this, and might even reach out. We still need to figure out how to do this, and we've talked about some ideas to some of you if we have questions. We're not going to ask you to interface with the with whoever the expert is, but we would, as we see needed, as we see it might be useful, reach out to some of you from different having different perspectives like that. That's about the best we could do and pull this off and get it out using fiscal year 17 funds. So what I'm doing right now is communicating where we're at. Just give you a chance to react quickly to that. And Stephanie, and we are just about out of time, so please be brief.
Thanks, Chuck. Stephanie, some of those questions that we put to the data commissioners were a little basic and naive. I hate to sound like it's okay to abuse the data commissioners, but not lawyers we're paying for, but I'd hate to spend money on some of those questions. I would suggest we have a go at them and revise them a bit. There wouldn't be questions I'd send to a data protection lawyer. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Stephanie. We'll take that into consideration. In fact, that could be an area, although it would have to be really quick turnaround, where we reach out to some of you and get your suggestions. It would have to be a really quick turnaround to make that happen. But thanks for that suggestion. Appreciate it. Is there any really strong objections to the leadership team taking the lead on this in the short term and doing the best we can to try and take advantage of current fiscal year funds to get some advice that is hopefully independent of the answers that we already got? Not that those shouldn't be taken seriously. They should be. But if you have any strong objections, please let that be known today. So that done, we'll go ahead and proceed as a leadership team then and keep you informed. And possibly even reach out to some of you. We can't, doing it with a full working group, it's just going to be unmanageable. So I hope people aren't offended by that. But it'll really help us if we can use fiscal year 17 funds. And hopefully there's enough trust in the leadership team to do that. Now, there's a poll on right now. The subpro new GTLD working group has requested that we switch meeting days for our working group meeting. This is not the cross-community session in Joburg, but rather the working group meeting. Our working group meeting was scheduled on Tuesday. They'd like to switch with us so that our working group meeting would be on Wednesday morning from 8:30 to 12:30. And we're just going to survey those on the call right now just to see if should we make this change. As far as the leadership team is concerned, we think it's okay, but we wanted to give the working group at least those on the call today, a real quick chance to say if it's a problem. If the change seems okay to you, I understand we haven't seen and we won't see until, I think, June 5th, the detailed schedule. But certainly if you know of any problems that this change would cause, answer no in this. And then the third choice, it looks like, is we'll not be able to participate whether it's on Tuesday or Wednesday, or you don't, you know, or no vote. And the default will be no vote if you don't send one. So could everybody please respond to this poll? Yes, if you're okay with the change as far as you know, understanding that all of us don't know too much about the schedule. If you already know, that would be a problem. If you can't participate in either one, either remotely or in person, check the third one, or you can check no vote. If everybody do that right now, I would appreciate that. Okay, and they'll tally that. Rod, go ahead.
Yeah, Rod Rasmussen. Chuck, you just asked the question verbally opposite the way it's stated in the
written. Did I really?
Yeah, I think so. So the question is, would this affect you, yes or no? Which is why I actually raised my hand in the first place. It actually would affect me positively, right? But that wasn't really kind of – I would actually be able to attend more of it by being based on Wednesday rather than Tuesday. But that wasn't really an option. So anyways, but I'm confused. If it – yes.
Last sentence is worded poorly. Should this change be made would affect – okay, so let me word it, and I'm sorry that it's not worded more clearly there. Should this change Lisa, go ahead.
Chuck, I've put a couple of things in chat. Yes means that changing the date to Wednesday would affect you in a negative way.
Oh.
And no means keeping the date on Tuesday would be okay for you.
Okay, so I did reverse it. If it would affect you negatively, I would have reworded this differently, but it's too late for that now. If this change would affected you, it would affect you negatively, you answer yes. Is that right, Lisa?
Correct. In other words, if we make this change and it stops you from attending the meeting, say yes.
Okay. If it wouldn't have any impact on you, answer no. And then you have the other two choices. So do that right now, please. Thanks, Rod, for pointing that out. Hopefully we'll get a sense of this. If we need to go back to the list, we'll do that. Okay. All right. Now we're out. We're past time by quite a bit now. I apologize for that. We have made some good progress in this call. Action. Confirming action items. Anybody on staff want to? Is anything not clear in terms of action items? We're going to have two poll questions coming out that you'll have until Saturday to respond. Rod's going to continue working on the with VA on the data of record issue, unreasonably restrict legitimate access. Any other action items we should go over? And Rod, I assume that's an old hand, but if it's not, speak up. Okay.
Chuck, I
anything
think the only other action item was for Natalie Coupe and anyone else who wishes to participate in a working group mailing list discussion of a new principle on proportionality.
Yeah, and that's a whole working group discussion, not a special working group. Let's be clear on that. So that's another action items. Staff will initiate a discussion that we'd like everybody to participate on the list, including Steve Metallic's question about thin data and proportionality. So thank you for anything else. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of the week. Participate on the list in the discussion and in the poll, and that'll facilitate our meeting next week. Thanks. Meeting adjourned. The recording can stop.